The Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Good evening and welcome to Desert Island Discs here on Capital FM. I'm Flavia Tumusime. Every Sunday we unpack someone's story and get to hear all the things that actually made them who they are today. Joining me is the Managing Director for White Mare Technology. He's an IT consultant and the managing director there at White Mare Technology. But that's not the part of the story you know him for. He's actually been the vice president for the Rugby Africa and also president of Uganda Rugby. That is Andrew Owor. Is that how they say the name?
Yes, yes, Owor. I'm actually impressed that you've pronounced it quite, well, quite close.
Thank you. What would be the right 100% way of saying it?
Owor, because it means night.
Night.
So war is the night.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, then if there's an A.
That's female.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And where you find somebody has an A, it means they were named after an aunt or somebody. It wasn't given to them. They were named after somebody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking just before we got on about rugby and how it's good. I was saying I wouldn't put my boys in rugby and you said it's the best thing for discipline.
Yeah.
How many years of the chunk of your life has rugby taken?
I would say 30-odd.
Wow.
30-odd years. I played rugby secondary school, first year in secondary, my senior one. And my life has not been the same since. It's been bumpy, but I would do it again if I was given a chance.
All right. So how I like to start the show, I say go back. We're going to your childhood and we are following you. So take us anywhere in your childhood where you'd like us to start the story of war.
Right, so the best place to start would be at Makerere. My dad was a professor at the university. So we lived in the university. 20 years of my life
at Makerere University.
Before that, we were in Kololo, but you know, it was still with the university.
Mm.
And that's where most of the action was, really. The war found us there, lived a lot of my younger adulthood, then went to university there. So again, I stayed on the same hill for...
Is it fun? There's a time where because I went to Moobs, which is on the other side.
Yeah.
And every time I would go to Makerere, just, you know, for whatever it was, I don't know why it just felt a bit dark, but it was just felt like I'd be bored there, for lack of a better way to place it. Felt like the streets were quest.
At our time, the university was kind of a closed off place for academics, and we the kids kind of had our own society, you know. We knew each other and we're still friends. Most of us are still friends. We even have a group, a WhatsApp group.
How would you name that WhatsApp group? Children who used to... Oh, you've got some cool name that you guys...
I think the name changes every time one of the members has a new mood.
Oh, dear.
But Mook remains at the beginning.
Right.
Yeah, but so we are the kids. We knew where to play football on the weekends. We knew, you know, the naughty stuff. There were places we were not allowed to go, but we would go.
Mm.
We were kind of known.
Because the place is large, so the chances they wouldn't even see you doing certain things.
Yes, I mean, the times I disappeared and my parents were looking for me.
And you're still on the campus.
I was still on the campus. I was the friend, and we were playing football till 7. And there was huge, you know, they were almost calling police.
Oh.
And I walk back with my friend and we're whistling and doing stuff. And I find two distressed parents there. And they're like, why are you worried? I'm on the university.
I was just chilling
with my friends, you know. That was the university. And I think it is a good life in the sense that you feel you're in an enclosed, safe environment.
Right.
But you're at the same time very free to go wherever you wanted. We would go into the halls of residence. So we knew Mary Stewart, we knew Livingstone, we knew, you know, the whole range of it. Mm-hmm. Fun part was when the university used to have a sports week or something where there was bull roasting. And there was these matches. Each hall would do a match past.
Yeah.
We were the little kids there at the front with the band.
Right.
That was us. If anybody took a video, you'd probably see my face somewhere there. all those childhood friends of mine are still my friends now.
What was Dad a professor of?
He's a professor of pathology. Still is a professor of pathology, but he's retired now.
Mm.
So he's at home.
Was it a large family?
We had a small family, but my dad comes from a large family.
Right.
And by extension, him being the oldest, we had a large family in the sense that all my cousins would join on the holidays, you know.
Being an African, I knew what it meant when you said he's the oldest.
Exactly.
I could see how that extends back.
So we have I have 79 first cousins.
I thought you said 79.
Yeah.
Seven?
79. Wow. 79. That's first cousins from my dad.
Oh, but they weren't living with you.
No.
Okay.
No. So yeah. It was in and out, different ones coming each time, and it was interesting that sense that, you know, you get to meet the cousins at different times, take them, you know, in bits and pieces.
Yes.
And then when you take my mom's side, if I put them all together, I have about 170.
Reunions must be fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Those Christmas parties that just are endless.
Yes.
I can imagine with
Yes, they're quite interesting. And then, you know, you put in the aunties and uncles. These are the first line relatives. You're not talking extended, too far extended, but we are quite a number.
Wow.
That was for me a good thing because I got to interact with different personalities, different types of people. And it also dawns on you after a while that, hey, you know far too many people.
You know? Well, you were mentioning to me that rugby for you was like sort of like a saving grace because you said you were naughty. So even at this point, are you a stubborn young man? I get the whole distressing your parents for disappearing.
Yeah.
But are you a typical, I will do everything and anything that I want to do kind of boy at that point?
Okay, so remember that I'm the last born.
Mm.
And we are five, so my sister's, you know, were older, and so I had to.
You're the only boy?
Yes, I'm the only boy. Only boy and last born.
Wow.
So that gives you some leverage to be stubborn.
Yes.
And in some cases, you want to get your sister annoyed, but you know that you're going to run to the other sister, you know.
Choices. Too many choices.
Yes. So I did that quite a bit. But, you know, they kind of. They were nice in the sense that they knew that I was untouchable, but they could also discipline me.
Also, they were much older.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The twins that I follow are 5 years ahead of me.
Okay.
So we're still very close, and that's it's good. I would say so. Again, our family was small. We were five, but most of my uncles and aunties had eight. And on average, and so it became a very big extended family. But by
the core,
the core of us.
I mean, you wouldn't pay me to live anywhere near school or to go back to school. So I'm imagining that for you, who actually lived in some form of school, with also a parent who was, you know, in education.
Yeah.
I don't know if that pushes you a bit when you're younger to sort of have that pressure to be in, you know, scholarly world.
Yeah. So there was pressure, but I always thought of it in a kind of comical way because my sisters, two of them are lawyers and the other two are doctors. And so we'd sit
around. That's a lot of pressure.
Yes. So I'd sit around a table and you know, people would come and say, so what are you going to become?
Ooh.
And I kept thinking, with all these making money, I can't be a doctor. I need to do something with money. I know I need to be an accountant. So my life, I kept thinking,
money.
Somebody has to manage their money. Oh.
Brilliant. We don't need to make more money.
No,
there's money.
Somebody has to manage it. At the back of my mind, I kept saying, I will not go into medicine and I'll not go into legal, but I want to do something in between that covers everything. Mm. I became an electrical engineer, but almost quickly went into IT, you know, and so I took, then I got a degree in computer science after that. So for me, IT found that I can get into any field because IT kind of
It's a support
anywhere.
For pretty much anything.
Yeah. So
I hear you.
And it was fun. And on the other side, you're playing rugby and you're having a cross range of people that you meet. Mm. You know, so rugby in school, you're all probably from a similar lifestyle.
Mm.
When you go to the university or you leave that environment, you get to meet another cross range of people.
Mm.
There you're having those who come from poor backgrounds, those who come from rich backgrounds, you know, different colors, different race, you know. So it was for me a very good, rugby being a very good place to learn even more about people's character.
Right. And I think I want to hear the story of how either rugby found you or you found it. But first, what's your first song choice?
My first song choice would be Joshua Addison.
Jesse.
Jesse.
Right.
From a phone booth in Vegas, Jesse calls at 5 a.m. to tell me how she's tired of all of them. She says, baby, I've been thinking about a trailer by the sea. We could go to Mexico, you, the cat and me. We'll drink tequila and look for seashells. Now doesn't that sound sweet? Oh, Jesse, you always do this every time I get back on my feet. Jesse, paint your pictures about how it's gonna be. By now I should know better. Your dreams are never free. But tell me all about our little trailer by the sea. Jesse, you can always sell any dream to me. Oh, Jesse, you can always sell any dream to me. She asked me how the cat's been. I say, Moses, he's just fine. But he used to think about you all the time. We finally took your pictures down off the wall. Jesse, how do you always seem to know just when to call? She says, get your stuff together, bring Mose and drive real fast. And I listen to her promise. I swear to God this time it's gonna last. Your pictures about how it's gonna be.
Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Discs. We just listened to Joshua Caddison, Jesse. Very beautiful song. I think there's nobody who's listened to Capital in many years who wouldn't sing along to every single word of that song. Which is the first song choice there? Andrew, or you? I want to know where the journey of rugby, because you said it's over 3 decades of your life. So that's pretty much your life. When do you fall in love with rugby, or is it the other way around? Did it fall in love with you?
I fell in love with rugby at 13. I was just joining secondary school, 13 and a half, 14. I remember very well that we were heading to the basketball court. You know, we're just young guys. Mm-hmm. Because of my height and my size, it was an assumption that basketball should be your sport. Mm. And so we go to the basketball court and would kind of wait on the side. And these guys, there's one basketball court, the older guys play, and then say 10 minutes to the end of the sports time is when they would allow us to get on. So you'd hardly touch the basketball, you know. And so I felt frustrated. One day we are going to the basketball. Mm-hmm. And then a friend at the rugby field said, hey, we don't have numbers. Mm. Can you join for a bit? I know you're heading to basketball. Join for a bit. And myself and Sylvain, who was my good friend, he's now in Rwanda. He said, since we're going to wait there anyway.
And not really touch the ball anyway.
Let's do 10 minutes here and then off we go. Mm. And the two of us never left the rugby field. Then the next day we went back to the rugby field, and I didn't leave the rugby field for 20 odd years. So it's
but up until then, it wasn't that you had interest in rugby or knew about rugby. Did you even care about sport, or was the basketball, let's just go and try it?
I was huge on sport because my older cousins, they used to play tennis at the university. So I was the ball boy. So I'd be the guy running around, picking up the balls, giving back. So I played tennis. I played a bit of basketball on the university as a kid. Again, the environment has all the facilities. So
you're really just trying everything.
Yes, but this we is were the trying thing everything. Yeah.
Sort of you found you could do.
And even when I played rugby, I played handball. I played volleyball. for the school team. Wow.
So you weren't doing one thing.
No. I wasn't. I was running for the school team. I was the best of the 200 meter.
You're one of those kids, eh?
Yeah.
That would be hating on in school. You're doing everything.
I used to go for the regional running.
You were at competitive level.
Yes. I got a number of certificates.
There you go.
For that, and I kept a lot of them just to remember how active I was. Mm. It kept me really busy. And kept my mind refreshed. And that's so, for me, sport is something that every kid in the world should do. And I don't think academics should only be the thing you do in school. For a kid to have that refreshing mind after you've had a long day of study, go do something that gets you sweaty, gets your mind off it. You interact with your colleagues in a different way.
Yeah.
Because now you begin to see their temperament. You begin to understand that I shouldn't deal with him this way. Mm. But in class, it's all formal.
Yeah.
It's all you
but the people
discussing
skills,
the people academics.
Skills are built on the
And exactly. The people skills is built on sport. Mm. Because you are dealing with somebody who's got his emotion. Mm. He won't bring it out in class. But he's going to bring it out on a court. Or he's going to bring it out on the field.
There'll be a fight.
Yes, there's going to be a fight. And you have to come in and say, hey, why? Mm. Why are you, why are you like this? And then eventually you learn that kid actually, maybe they're not visiting him on Sunday or something like that.
Wow.
Or he's run out of pocket money or something like that. But,
But they're taking the frustration out on
Yeah, they're
on
taking
the
it out on somebody else. Mm. And it is real life scenarios without the pressure of real life.
Yes.
You know,
I used to have a friend at school who played rugby.
Yeah.
And till today, I'm confused about her passion for rugby, because when I look at rugby, I look at rough, I look at violence, I look at pain, because I'm like, they're running towards somebody. It's just rough.
Yeah.
As a female, I would not understand. But as for a guy, I would see how a guy would have fun enjoying it. And she's always the person who's tell us how this is the one sport that creates a family. And she'll try to preach that whole thing. It's like a family. If you understood it, you would love it. Anne Sizomon, I don't even know if you know her, but
yes, I know Anne very well.
There's a time she broke her leg, and I said, but see, that's the thing. Why are you returning to something as rough as that? But that's all we're seeing, rough.
And she married a rugby player.
Exactly. See what I mean? Something about rugby, when people touch it and understand it, they don't leave. So I wanted you to help me and the listener just get that thing that gives you guys the passion in the sport of rugby, because as you're gonna say, we don't click.
Yes. So rugby has 5 major values. Mm. And for you to get it, you must understand those values. One is discipline. The other is integrity, respect, passion, and solidarity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So once you've got those, the sport is woven around those 5 values.
Right.
So any child, any human being interacting with rugby interacts with those 5 values at any one time.
Must.
You have to. Because the sport is, even the rules are such that you are rewarded for what you do. And if you as an individual, because there are 15 people on the field and each one has a job to do. If you don't do your job, the next guy can't do his job. Right. So, unlike the individual,
it's not I will shine on my own.
No, you can't. And we've seen scenarios where somebody tries to shine on their own, and the whole team will come back and them say, "Look, why didn't you pass that ball at that time? We agreed pass it at that time, not 2 seconds later. At the time is so that builds integrity.
Yes.
You must do what
you're supposed to do
at the right time. We also have a rule: you are not allowed to shame the opposition.
What?
No. We must respect the opposition. Even the
Come
fans.
Come on, dirty talking is fun in sport.
Yes, but it is against rugby values.
Wow.
It's against rugby values. And you'll find that's the reason why rugby is the only sport where a referee will tell you something, and you find that even if the guy is 3 times the size of the referee, he will kneel down and say, "I'm sorry."
He'll do, wow.
We have to have utmost respect. You can get banned from rugby for simply disrespecting a referee, disrespecting an opposition player.
Really?
You must have full respect for yourselves and for the opposition. So that alone, you can see it's teaching a value there.
Yep.
And many people struggle with that part a lot. Mm. But if you've been in rugby long enough, you begin to learn respect for other people and for how they are. Mm. You can't change the other person.
Right.
The other person is faster than you. You're a bigger, heavier guy.
Faster.
You have your strength. So you have to respect that fact that he's fast. Mm. So you have to then think think, and find a strategy of how I'm going to take this guy down
with his skill,
with his strength, right. But my strength. Work at my strength.
Yes.
You see? And that's where the passion comes in. Mm. So you begin to have, say, I must find my niche on how I can use my strength so that I can overcome the other person's strength.
So I'm the best rugby player because I can, you know.
Because I can do that. So everybody's chosen on a team because of
their thing.
That's why you see in a rugby team, they're short guys, big guys, small guys, tall guys. They're those who are very good at jumping. Those who have very good passes over 30 meters. They're those who are very good at thinking and reading the game. Everybody is required in the sport.
Wow.
And so we call it a multifaceted game because of that. So you'll not have, most other sports, they'll say, we just need tall people. We yes, just need yes, fast
yes,
people.
Yes.
We just need those who are strong.
But whereas rugby
we even have the weak one. Yeah. You still have to be strong enough to carry your weight.
Yeah.
But you're not as strong as the prop who can carry 200 kilos. You know, you can't carry 50 kilos, but your tackling ability puts you on the team because nobody will get past you. You know, so everybody work towards your strength rather than working towards your weakness. Wow. And that isn't that a life skill?
It is. It is.
And then to do all that, you need to have a discipline.
Mm.
There's no way you can play rugby if you are drinking on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and expect that on Saturday you're going to perform.
Could be at the game,
it will never happen. You have to have a discipline. You have to understand what you're trying to achieve at the end of the week. And if you do want to have a drink with friends, you understand that at certain point I have to stop and I have to go home. Mm. And that's
individual discipline.
Exactly.
Nobody has to.
Exactly. There's a team discipline, but there's an individual discipline. So you see that in the sport and in the culture of the sport and in the social life of the sport, it is these values are actually there. Mm. And the rules don't allow you to go outside of that.
Yeah. So, but you know, it's one thing to say that now as Andrew Waugh at your age, with your experience, with how much you've interacted with the game of rugby and even the leadership positions you've had. It's one way to describe that perspective right now. But as a teenage boy who's just getting to interact with the game, it must have been a phased out growth on curve.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, at some point there is a departure between I want to continue actively playing and I want to get into administration. Because there is slightly different approaches to the two. So when I was actively playing, like you say, a player does not care about all the financials behind it, all the other details that are off the field.
Yeah.
Whereas once you're off the field, you still have to follow those values, but you are now worried and thinking about how to build the player. That's a different type of discipline as well. You grow on two different levels. And I always say, once a player has retired and they go into
administration,
they make much better administrators.
Ah.
Because they've touched a bit of the action.
Mm.
And now they are able to make judgment calls, good judgment calls.
Even for the team.
Because
they've been there.
Yeah, and even when you look generally and you find a rugby player in a corporate management, they tend to be the better corporate managers because they do understand lifestyles. They have dealt with different groups of people at an emotional level and at a very high emotional level. You know, somebody really wants to punch the other and you have standing in between and you're saying, no. That's against the rules or against the values that we stand for.
Right. The rugby conversation doesn't stop, but then this gentleman here is in, well, he did already mention that he did IT. And he's even currently still in that field.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to see how the two ended up weaving into each other. But your second song choice first.
Second song choice would be Sade, King of Sorrow.
Oh.
I'm crying everyone's tears, and they're inside a rival war. I died the night before, and all of these remnants of joy. What am I supposed to do? I want to cook you a soup that warms your soul, but nothing will change, nothing will change at all. It's just a day that brings it all about.
another day. Nothing's any good. DJ's playing the same song. I have so much to do. I have to carry on. I wonder if this grief will ever let me go. I feel like I am the king of sorrow. Walk away. Will I disappoint my future if I stay? It's just today that brings it all about. Just another day. Nothing's any good. The DJ's playing the same song. I have so much to do. To carry on.
Desert Island Discs on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Desert Island Discs and King of Sorrow Sade was... Anybody who asks for a Sade song, you know they like music. It's not by mistake. It's not by mistake. Andrew War, you talked about rugby with a passion, and thank you for bringing that perspective for us to understand the values that rugby would bring, because the rest of us just see the tackling. Tackle, you fall, and you say, ah, that must have pained you to do that. But yet there's so much behind what the actual game teaches people. But at school, you decided and chose, okay, you weren't going to be the lawyer, like your siblings, you weren't going to be a doctor, but you said IT?
Yes, I went into engineering and then IT. Mm-hmm. And I went into IT majorly at the point when I broke my hand. In rugby.
So when you were studying engineering, you were still playing, actively playing.
I played for the country.
Yes.
And then, actually, historically, I scored the first international try for Uganda. The first it was the first World Cup qualifier that Uganda participated in 2001.
Mm-hmm. When I told my husband I was coming, because he's a sports journalist and a fanatic, and I said your name, then he paused and said, who? Then he said, oh, he's done quite well for the game. So I think he's applauding you for on the game, on being an active player on the other side. Yeah. So I guess your track record speaks for itself, as they say. But yes, engineering while actively playing, which must have been hard. How do you...
It is. It was quite difficult because, you have, I must say I had good friends. A lot of my engineering class friends were really good. And we still have a group.
They supported
they supported me through.
Because how much time does rugby take if you're active playing at that level that you were doing?
Oh, it's a good 30% of your time. And again, you have to have the discipline. That's where if you're not disciplined, it could take 50% of your time very easily. But if you have the discipline, you could bring it down to 30 and you could work it through. Because
you're training every day, first of all.
Yes, you're training every day. And in our time, you had to travel. So I was in St. Mary's College, Kisubi, and the games are in Kampala. Mm-hmm. So there was explicit permission by the headmaster
to let
me out. Mm-hmm. So I just had to go to the duty master and I say that I'm going for this particular thing. And then I was picked up.
Because you said playing for the country at university or
yes.
before.
Even at school,
you were.
So there's something we used to call, used to be called, now I think it's the under 20s, but it used to be called a schools combined.
Yes.
And we played Kenya schools combined against Uganda schools combined. And you won't believe it, at that time, I played for my country barefoot. There were no boots. I'm a lock playing for Uganda barefoot. It was amazing.
You're playing against schools that have shoes. People are wearing
some
shoes.
Some of them had shoes. So, you had to kind of watch out. At that time, the rules were not very clear.
Okay.
Now you can't do that.
Yes.
But at that time, it was not. So you sometimes got a stud. A metal stud onto your
stuck.
Foot.
Oh, no.
But that was...
You didn't care.
Well, yeah, at that time, you
were having a good time.
You're a tough guy. Yeah. You're, you know, you're, so it was fun. But that, so I played for the school, and that time I was the captain of the school's school side. Then I played for the senior national side when I got to university.
Yes, yes.
And then after that, you know, played at the club level for many years.
Help me understand that, because I can't, and I do know I can multitask, but when it comes to things that I would have a passion for to that level, I'm not sure how I could keep the discipline, the determination to play my rugby with the same passion you were playing it for at the level of competition you were playing it for and care about my degree in engineering. Do you know what I mean? Because in my mind, I'd be like, no, this is what I'm going to pursue and I'm going to excel at it. Why?
Yeah. I think that's where my dad comes in. Mm. That's where he comes into the picture. He was silently pushing.
I like that. Said but not said.
Yes.
You know?
If anybody who knows him, he's not a big talker.
Right.
But he was silently pushing at the back. And, you know, at some point he said, I don't understand that sport.
Ooh.
And for me, I think...
But you were playing at competition level and you were brilliant at it.
Oh, yes. And I can tell you the happiest time in my rugby career as a kid was... We're playing under 20s in Nairobi against Kenya. I was the vice captain, and I had just kind of hinted at home that I'll be in Nairobi.
Yeah.
And my dad flew into Nairobi and surprised me.
Oh,
so
bless.
At the end of the game, you know, everybody's doing a handshake, blah, blah, blah. I'm about to receive a beer.
Okay.
And there he is standing on the side. And I was so happy.
Please tell me you won that game.
No, we yes, we did. That was the one time. That was the one time
the
we
one
beat
time
Kenya.
You won. Is the one time Dad was there.
Yes.
Oh wow.
And so good. He was so happy, and we had gone by bus.
Tell me, was that the first time he was actually watching you play?
It was the first time he had watched a full game. My mom had come to watch before, but this was the first time he actually watched a full game.
Wow.
I don't even know how he got in. I just know that at the end of the game,
he was there.
He was standing right there. He said hi and he said, go have fun with your friends. Mm. And then off he went.
But he's still at university, was saying, I don't understand those things. I want you to pursue your education.
Yes. So he was silently pushing. So and again, look, my family is very ambitious. So you've got a... two doctors, two lawyers. You're not about to monkey around with your academics. We did push each other, in a sense. It was always a thing of I had to have both. There was no way I was gonna say rugby is the end of the world. No, yeah. Neither was academics the end of the world because rugby taught me social life that academics couldn't and vice versa. It was. It was important.
You always knew that the two had to happen.
The two had together. To happen, and even now, I can't divorce my business from rugby. You
True.
Know, a lot of the people I interact with are rugby related, and more comfortable working with them because we understand, we know the code.
You've been on both sides. Who shields the players? Because I've got to keep my focus.
Yeah.
I've got a game. I've got to represent. I've got to be my best. Because also the people I'm competing with, even if world over, may not have the same problems
exactly.
as my Uganda.
Exactly.
So
yes.
who shields the people who should focus on the thing?
And that has to be, unfortunately, it has to be the administrators to do that. The players, I would always advise any active player, do not get involved in administration. Because that... can kill your game almost completely. And I come from an era when I played in schools and then I played at university. At university, I was the chairman of the club.
Mm.
I was also the coach. I was also the team manager.
Oh dear.
The clothes got washed at home. The rugby gear, it got washed at home. So my mom would help with the washing. And so I was the whole span of it. And my friend Gideon would help. You know, and so the two of us were everything, you know.
Jeez.
So you're coming from that era where it's a one-man run business.
Mm.
But on the outside, everybody looks at Makere, Impis or whatever. And they say, oh, these boys
They're
are doing
well.
But at the back of it, you are putting a lot of time and effort into making
it happen.
Look what it is. So it is very important to have that group of people.
What's your third song choice?
My third song choice would be Anne-Marie. Mm-hmm. 2002.
Anne-Marie, 2002.
I will always remember the day you kissed my lips, light as a feather. And it went just like this. No, it's never been better than the summer of 2002. We were only 11, but acting like grown-ups, like we are in the present. Drinking from plastic cups, singing love is forever and never. Well, I guess that was true. Dancing on the hood in the middle of the woods of an old Mustang, where we sang songs with all our childhood friends. And it went like this, say, oops, I got 99 problems singing ba-ba-ba. Hold up, if you wanna go and take a ride with me, better hit me, baby, one more time. Paint a picture for you and me on the days when we were young, singing off the top of both our lungs. Now we're under the covers. Fast forward to 18, we are more than lovers. Yeah, we are all we need when we're holding each other. I'm taken back to 2002. Say, oops, I got 99 problems singing ba ba ba. Hold up, if you wanna go and take a ride with me, better hit me, baby, one more time. Paint a picture for you and me on the days when we were young, singing off the top of both our lungs on the day we fell in love. Ooh, ooh, on the day we fell in love.
Desert Island Discs. With Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Discs with me, Flavia. 2002, Anne-Marie's a song we just listened to. I have Andrew Owoor. You were talking about actually probably not something that's not strange. Ugandans probably already knew the struggles that happened in sport. But yeah. I think for me what really drew me back is you saying that even mom would help, you know, wash the kids, and everything used to happen at home. I was everything. I was the coach. I was the player. I was the. That's painful, you know, because then I'm confused how you even still have the passion for the sport and have watched it grow up to this level, because there are many points where you could have given up.
Yes, many points in time. I would say at a university level, and then many points in time when I got married and had kids. It is. There are so many points in time.
It's not just you. When it's just you can make some of these quick decisions
for
yourself.
You can make decisions. And now you've got a wife and two kids. And there are people writing all sorts of stuff about you in the newspapers. And there are people who are saying you're taking money and you're not. You're
accountability.
And then your team is not doing too well. In my case, my wife was sick. And we had to balance between, you know. So at some point, I start my company, and so I have to get off work and
build this.
And build the company. And she's the breadwinner, you know. And in between,
you know, when they say this movie is getting sticky.
In between, there's the rugby.
Yeah.
And then there's the kid coming through.
How long have you been married?
I was married 13 years, until she passed.
Yeah.
But. That was 13 years within the rugby structures. And yeah, eventually so it started over her fighting it.
But because technically when you met to sort of date, you were already in the thing.
I was already in rugby.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's the to love and to hold, but until you get in and you're like, wait, what am I holding?
And you're hoping that it's to love and to hold, but with the exception of rugby?
She's like, I will love you and hold you.
Yeah.
This is, wait, even rugby is still here. And all it comes with.
Yes, it's like a co-wife, you know.
Exactly, all it comes with. You must have had a couple of arguments where she probably understood why you loved what you loved, but she didn't understand everything that came with it.
Yes, and it took, as I say, it took years. Yeah. When I started coaching eventually, because I played and then I retired from playing and then I started coaching. Is probably when she began to understand, because I dealt directly with the players now at a different level. I would come back home and have to do my coaching plans and everything. And she was part of it. And then I would go and coach. And then she would come to a game on Saturday and begin to see what the players are doing. And she's shouting, "Hey, that's not what you were told to do." You know, it's because now she'd become like an assistant coach.
Yes. We told you.
Was not the plan, you know, because she now knew the plans. She knew the players almost on a personal level.
Yes.
And she was a medical doctor. So, again, I brought my family into the whole thing.
Wait, let me guess. She was the team doctor.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
not in the sense of appointed team doctor, but
it was a responsibility.
Yes, it was a responsibility. I had a number of players with some medical issues sometimes, and I would just say to them, "Hey, go to my wife. She'll look after you." And
you're the problem.
She'd go to the hospital, and you know she would look after them, and if there are any bills, would cover the bills.
Oh, bless.
You know, but we were part of a club which had also some sort of a resource, so it was good, and that's where the club family comes
values,
in.
It's
very hard to divorce your life from the rugby.
True.
If you do,
as we're seeing from your story, one in the same.
Yes. It's very hard to do that.
I'm sorry about your loss. How many years has it been?
4 years now.
Four years.
She died just before lockdown. She had breast cancer, and she struggled with it for a number of years. I remember friends of mine would see her and she would say, no, I'm just on a diet. But she was going through chemo and all that. We had an operation. We went through the whole process. But at the end of the day...
and the children were...
It took the better of her. But the children watched all this. So for them, then they were young. So it was easy for me to explain the basics without going into too much detail.
Mm.
You know, I remember things like when her hair fell off because of the chemo.
Yeah.
I had to shave her head. One of my kids come and says, why are we shaving today? I said, no, mom just wants us to shave. And she said, okay, then we're all shaving.
Oh, dear.
You know? So I shaved everybody's head, you know, as part of a family fun thing.
Yeah.
And they took it in stride. So it was an interesting time in my life. And at this time also, you've got all these rugby battles and you have to kind of learn to put everything in its box. And if you don't, one spilling into the other can cause adverse problems. So you kind of kept everything in a good in a package.
When you describe to me your wife in this short conversation, it makes me feel like you had a warrior on your side. You know,
yes.
A very, very, very strong woman on your side. But
she was a teammate.
A teammate.
She was my cheerleader.
Yeah, but when you say that, you know, you have to compartmentalize, sort of, you know, put everything in its box. One might assume that it's been rosy for you to deal with everything. It's just a story you're saying. You know, sometimes when we go through experiences, they roll off your tongue. This happened and this happened and this happened and this happened. But for you, when it was happening, it wasn't rolling off the tongue.
No.
Is it? You know?
No.
You can't tell me coping is from just compartmentalizing. Where does your mind go in such times? You know, because, I mean, that couldn't have been an easy journey.
No, it's not an easy journey. But maybe what helped me was being that last born, that last kid. You kind of learn to play alone. You learn to be in your space.
Mm-hmm.
So I have learned to be able to withdraw to that space and be there and just think things through and say, listen, so-and-so said this. However, they are unaware of what's happening in the other box.
Mm.
And therefore, they are speaking out of...
just this box.
Yes. All they know is that box.
Yes.
And so let them... They what they see is what they're talking about.
Right.
So let them... yeah, so don't take that in any stride. And pick what's the concept, what's the issue, and then take that into the other box. So I learned to do that very early in life. And that's what helps me in many senses. I just look at something and I say, okay, from what that person knows, that's the best they can say anyway. So that's fine.
Yes.
That's okay. I respect the fact that that's all they know. when they do know something better? More, they may have said something different or done something different. But it's not an easy space to be in. It's especially when you have kids. It's not an easy space, and I think there's no way I could have gone through that without my family. Again, this is where the beauty about having older sisters was, because they were, I had four mothers, you know, five mothers as opposed to having one.
Right. They each
stepped in their own way. And, you know, kind of made sure the kids are fine. Are you okay?
Yeah.
You're okay. Mm. Just be by yourself. Do whatever it is.
When you lost her, the oldest was about what?
My son was 10.
Oh, okay.
He was 10. My daughter was 8 at that time. And so, you know, they knew what was going on.
You could talk, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They knew what was going on. Actually, they used to help her up the stairs. So they knew she was ill.
Mm.
They didn't know the extent.
The extent. Mm, yeah, I hear
but
you.
But they just hoped that one day she would be
better.
Up and running again, you know.
Because breast cancer isn't something you would typically lose someone over.
And
many chances.
The cancer itself cured. And then what happened was we've been doing a lot of scans on her chest, but the cancer had gone to her brain. So by the time we caught the tumor in the brain, we caught it and the doctor said, look, you've just finished chemo. Don't start another round immediately. Let's try and manage everything for a couple of days and then start another regimen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we didn't last those days. That was the only thing.
Yes.
But it was something was manageable. Mm-hmm. And I remember she died on a rugby day, actually. So I was going to a rugby game and I said to her, look, are you coming? And she said, no, I'm not feeling too well today. But I want you to give me every single detail, especially if, and she had certain key players she loved.
Right.
Say, if this one doesn't do this and that one doesn't
tell me,
I want to know because I want to talk to them next time. And I went and we watched the game and I came back and narrated everything to her. And she was like, yeah, okay. We lost the game though.
Come on now.
You know, she was quite happy that she was able to be part of that. Mm. And, you know, that night she died in her sleep. But, you know, it was for me a good journey for her to walk with the kids and everybody. It was quite a thing for us.
Wow.
Well,
sorry about your loss. And I'm glad the last couple of years you've held on.
Yes.
To each other, you and the kids, and
yes,
of course, and to the teammates and everybody who supported you through it. I wonder what your next song choice would be.
So my next song choice would be one I dedicate to her.
Okay.
I guess. It's Angel Like You by Hayley.
Yeah.
And that to me is a song that reminds me of her. Mm-hmm. And I got to know that song actually around the time when she was ill, so it's one of those songs that
means
a lot to me.
Okay.
Yep.
Can't believe how much has changed in only half a year. Can't believe you never saw the summer. There's so much more to tell you, so I talk to you sometimes. Especially when I'm watering your flowers. I was so, so lucky to know someone like you. I cherish every moment that we share. Everybody has an angel just like you. Who's gone too soon? Someone with the answer when we don't know where to turn. For every missing person in the world, there's an angel just like you. can hear you whisper, feel it beating in the wind. Won't you come and wrap your wings around me? I wish I could be brave like you and hold back all these tears that fill my eyes. Grief is like an ocean trying to drown me.
Island Discs on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Desert Island Discs and Angel Like You by Haley. That's a song that you said you would dedicate to your late wife, Edna. To Edna. Edna, Angel, stay up there, so I know she's listening to this. So I don't follow much of sport in Uganda, but you know, you hear the tidbits of here and there. And I feel like rugby is doing well.
Yeah.
That has come full circle over the years. You know, you keep growing. Yeah. Every year you improve on something. For somebody like you who's been at the helm of chairing rugby in this country, what has led to us growing? It couldn't just be the money, because I'm sure the money is still missing.
No.
We still don't have what we need.
Definitely not the money. Because having run rugby in Africa, I do know that Uganda has one of the smallest budgets on the African continent. Mm. Some of the West African countries have much bigger budgets than we do. And yet, they're nowhere near the performance that Uganda is performing at.
Imagine.
So I would say that just having seen it through the eyes of other unions across the continent, a lot of it has to do with governance and the processes in governance. Mm-hmm. Because we set out to have a certain structure within the rugby union. And that structure, if destroyed, will destroy the performance.
Right.
Because It hinges a lot on the fact that we are well-governed, relatively well-governed.
Right.
And as such, you then invest your money in the right place. When you begin to invest your money in the wrong place, when you begin to have people getting involved in the sport that are not necessarily interested in seeing the performance of the player, they are more interested in seeing figures come to them and sign off little envelopes for sitting allowance and sign off, you know. I can be very proud that I've run rugby for 30 odd years. I never, ever received a penny for sitting to meet. Never. Many times we would travel around the world, and if my ticket is not paid for, I would pay for it. Even when I run Africa, they pay for my ticket. But when it comes to things like visa fees and fees when you're on the ground, you pay for those.
Right.
So you can imagine that you're traveling to Europe, and yes, they've paid for everything and they've landed you there. But now some of the costs rack up for yourself. And so you're giving back in a sense. And you shouldn't sit there and expect that this should come from...
It's someone else's responsibility. Right.
I think you've already been given an opportunity to get where you are, and that's your give back. And you know, and things like that. So I find sport as a tool that if a kid does not have, they're like a very nice packaged gift that is empty inside. It's you're really nicely packaged because you've done your academics, you're top of your class, you're nicely
you're
packaged.
Whole.
You're whole. It's nice present to hand over to society. Say I produced this.
Yes, true.
Very nice. Yeah. But on the inside, he's as lost as anybody else. Mm. You know.
Yeah.
Whereas if he was involved in sport along that, on the inside he has something. He has something to start with. He knows how to deal with people. He knows how to run his company. He knows how to run whatever it is you give him to run.
Right.
And he knows how to, you know, to deal with angry people and to deal with sad people and to deal with, you know, happy people. He's learned a bit of that.
Yeah.
And he can build on that on
soft
top
skills.
Of his academics.
Right.
So the two have to
go hand in hand.
Hand in hand. Mm. I don't see how you can build a society without both, in my view.
How long have you been retired out of active play?
Well, my last international game was 2004, so that's been a while. But I've played club rugby.
Mm.
So my last club rugby game was in the year 2000.
Yeah. What are you actively now touching to sort of do in terms of work?
I am involved in the back end,
right.
Really just
support.
We are building an academy right now
for
rugby, and I think that's a very good thing.
Mm.
We are involved in managing the rugby at the end. I do not ever want to be at the front of it because I've seen what it is like. But I would like to help guide those who are there now, who are very excited about it. And they
for you, the fire has fizzled out. Nowadays, what takes your time? You've got a company?
Yeah, I am a consultant, an IT consultant, but I run an IT firm, which we started with my wife. Then, as I said, it's I would say mostly that. I get involved in rugby when I need to get involved in rugby. At the moment, it's mostly building the company and building the young people that I'm now working with who in a way also need mentorship because I just learned some of them don't know certain basics of business. They look at something and they are so excited about, oh, we are going on a field trip. And you're like, wait, have you got the costings done right? Have you done this? Have you done that? And you know, to me, I think that's another level of helping young people that I work with.
I really, I've loved your story, and I think I've changed my mind about rugby. It's not just about the tackles
and the
pain and the,
that's,
you know?
That's 80 minutes, and the rest of the week is what really matters.
The
80 minutes
the fiber,
on the Saturday is just a tiny
just
piece
a tiny,
of
yes.
you expressing yourself.
Yes.
And just tell you something, in school, when I felt angry and didn't get what the teacher was saying, I always wanted to get the rugby field and just let out.
Wow.
Okay? Just let out. Just be free. You're going to try and run into somebody hard. They're going to tackle you hard. Then you're going to learn that, oh, wait.
We both deal with each other.
I can't run into people so hard. I need to regulate a bit.
Yes.
You know? And that when you come off that, you begin to say, oh, okay, actually I need to regulate my anger as well.
Mm.
If you've got kids, make sure they play some rugby. Not, they don't need to play international. They don't need to play.
Because just like football here, you can take kids to start at whatever age. What age do children start with rugby?
So rugby starts even at under 7.
Is it?
Yeah, but it depends on your society where you are. So
yes.
At Chadondo, we have the under 7s, the under 12s, the under 14s, the under, where they play on a Saturday, Saturday morning. We've had a lot of kids train without supervision in schools and in places. And that's what gives rugby a bad reputation, is people who don't fully understand the sport trying to run the sport.
Right.
There is a training process for you to become a coach, even a coach of the under 12s. And there is a specific training. And anybody can do it. In Hong Kong, all the parents in some of the schools are coaches of a level 1.
Mm.
So when you see the kids, they're actually being coached by their own parents.
Which is good.
Which is a very good thing. And so you watch that, and but those parents are trained.
Yes.
And they know exactly how to deal with injuries and what to do with what situation.
Wow.
But you get a lot of people who don't know, and they go straight into it.
Yes.
They're watching rugby on the TV.
And say, this is simple.
Yes, they think that it's... And then you get head injuries,
yes.
You get broken bones, you get a lot of things that could be avoided if you knew what you're doing.
Wow. You are welcome for that rugby lesson that we got impromptu here on the show. Thank you so much, Andrew Waugh, for your time. It's been amazing to hear this story. And it's unique how most of your story was rugby, actually.
Yes.
Which is pretty much
yes.
your life. What's your final song choice? And if there's anything you might want to share with us.
My final song choice would be, I guess, Craig David.
Craig David.
Walking Away.
Yeah. Well, it's been an honor hearing your story. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. And that's it for Desert Island Discs. You can get this and more on our podcast, Capital FM Uganda, anywhere you get podcasts. Good night.
I'm walking away from the troubles in my life.
Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.